Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everyone to Senate Labor and Commerce and call this committee meeting to order at 1:33 p.m. We're in Belt's Room 105 of the Thomas Stewart Building in the nation's most beautiful, slightly foggy capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Today is Friday, May 16th. Members present are Senator Greg Jackson, Senator Dunbar, Senator Merrick, and myself, Senator Bjorkman. Senator Yunt is excused today. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Welcome again, everyone, to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please turn off or silence your cell phones. I would like to extend an especially warm Senate Labor and Commerce welcome to our recording secretary, Carrie Tupo, and our LAO moderator, Marnie Provost. Our agenda today has three items. First up will be House Bill 121, Accounting Practice Privilege, followed by Senate Bill 154, Home Care Employment Standards Advisory Board. Last up will be Senate Bill 62, Board of Parole Membership Report. Senate Bill 89 has been removed from our agenda today. Discussions with stakeholders continue as to PA scope of practice and what the right fit is for that bill. We will take it up again at a future meeting. First up today is House Bill 121, Accounting Practice Privilege. This is our second hearing on this bill. I'd like to invite the bill sponsor, staff, to the Honorable Representative Calvin Schrage, Amanda Ndemo, to the table to provide a brief recap of the bill.
Thank you, Senator Bjorkman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Amanda Ndemo, staffer to Representative Schrage. To give a brief overview, House Bill 121 modernizes Alaska's CPA licensure process to help address the state's accounting shortage and align with national standards. The bill reduces the required education from 150 credit hours to 120 credit hours for CPA candidates, provided they have 2 years of relevant experience, making the pathway to licensure more accessible. It also updates practice privilege provisions. Thank you. It also updates practice privilege provisions, allowing qualified out-of-state CPAs to practice in Alaska without obtaining a separate license. These changes aim to increase the state's CPA workforce while maintaining professional standards and supporting economic development.
Thank you very much, Ms. Ndemo. Appreciate that. Are there any questions from committee members for Ms. Ndemo? Thank you very much. At this time, I'd like to have a little bit of discussion in regards to this bill and kind of the versions that we've heard about it as far as differences between the bill as it came over from the House to the Senate and what we've done so far as making changes to the bill. In the State Affairs Committee, which the member to my right and I both sit on, there were added provisions to provide for CPAs as professional conservators, which is that material is in another bill in this committee, in Senate Bill 99. And I would like to, at this time, invite Mr. Noah Klein up to talk a little bit about those provisions and what they do.
Thank you, Chair Bjorkman, members of the committee. My name is Noah Klein. I'm Associate Counsel for the Alaska Court System, for the record. And what Senate Bill 99, which is now included in HB 121, does is it essentially there is currently in law a requirement that a private professional conservator also is certified as a guardian. And what Senate Bill 99 does is eliminates that requirement if the person who seeks the private professional conservator licensure is also a certified public accountant, is a CPA. Now, what that person would still have to do if they were ever appointed as a private professional conservator is do the training course that is currently required for any other family member who is a conservator. So while the requirement would be less than the requirements that are on all other private professional conservators, they would still have a training requirement. And I should have said this up front to be clear, the court system is neutral on both HB 121 and SB 99. We don't have a position on this. It's really a policy call for the legislature, but the result of the changes in SB 99 will be that there will be more, theoretically more, private professional conservators, which is a good thing, at the expense of potentially more ease of them becoming private professional conservators, so easing the requirements on them. That's the policy choice for the legislature.
Thank you very much, Mr. Klein. Are there any questions from committee members about the addition of Senate Bill 99 into House Bill 121 and what that material does? I have one question. Could you talk a little bit more about what the training or education is for guardianship that CPAs would not have to undergo to become private professional conservators?
So currently there's a requirement, as I said in law, to the chair, Noah Klein. There's currently a requirement to be to have taken the guardian certification, and that is a test of about 20 or 30 questions specific to both guardianship and conservatorship. So although it's called a guardian certification, the terminology is not uniform across states, so guardian often includes a conservator. So for example, in Alaska, most protected persons have a both guardianship and conservatorship. A conservatorship is limited to the financial piece. Maybe 10% of all adults who have a guardianship or conservatorship are limited to only the conservatorship. So that was a long-winded way of saying, essentially, they wouldn't be taking this test that licensed guardians in the state currently take.
I think I have one more question. What do guardians need to know that conservators don't necessarily need to know in order to execute their duty responsibly for their wards?
To the chair, I'm not sure that it's something different that one needs to know. It's just their different duties. So guardians have duties with regard to the entire life affairs of their ward, not just the financial affairs. So, for example, guardians are making decisions about where their wards live and the type of housing their wards have and making sure the wards are getting all their benefits, whereas a conservator is limited to the financial affairs of their ward.
And you said that most people that have a conservator also would need it. You said 90% would need a guardianship status as well.
To the chair, the vast majority of adults who are wards in the state of Alaska both have a guardianship and a conservatorship or have just a guardianship. It's a limited subset that only have a conservatorship. And so a private professional conservator would only be able to, their certification would only be sufficient for those who only needed a conservatorship. If they needed a guardianship as well, they would still have the guardianship requirements.
Understood. So the policy choice then before the committee, as I understand it, is do we think it's okay for CPAs to serve as guardians without taking the guardianship test? Is that right?
To the chair, I would phrase it as, does the legislature think that it's okay for CPAs to serve as conservators without taking the guardianship test, but they will take the current required training for family members who serve as conservators, for example. So family members who serve as conservators currently also are not licensed as guardians. They're not private professionals, but they do have a required training that is also included in this bill.
Understood. So I think this is my last question then. So under this provision, a CPA would not be able to be a guardian.
To the chair, a CPA could be a guardian if they went through the additional requirements to be a private professional guardian.
Very well. Okay, I understand. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a little confused. Is guardianship even part of the conversation? I thought it was just conservatorship for CPAs. So,
through the chair to Senator Gray Jackson. The reason guardianship is part of the conversation is because the guardianship licensure currently to be certified as a guardian, you're essentially being certified as both a guardian and conservator. It's a broader category. So if you had that certification, it currently is in law sufficient to become a private professional conservator.
Okay, if I can follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, please.
Okay, so a conservator just deals with the finances and guardianship deals with everything, including finances.
Through the chair to Senator Gray Jackson, a guardianship could deal with everything. So if you had a guardianship and conservatorship, it would deal with everything, and the guardianship certification tests on everything.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you. I think I understand. Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Klein? Okay. Hearing and seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll now open public testimony on House Bill 121. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify to House Bill 121? Is there anyone online? At this time, hearing and seeing none, we will close public testimony on House Bill 121. Is there any committee discussion? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just because you alluded to the fact that there are two versions before us, if we do look to the will of committee, I would prefer if we moved the State Affairs Committee provision, or I should say the State Affairs version, CS, that includes the conservatorship portion. I think it is a good idea, and I like the idea of if we have these two CPA-related bills, we could move them simultaneously and get a little bit of economies of scale. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Any further comments on House Bill 121? Okay. So I am comfortable also moving the State Affairs version, which is version G. I think that the questions, thank you for all listening to my questions and conversation with Mr. Klein on the record. I think those adjustments are moving in the right direction. So members have that version G in their packet. What is the will of the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to report House Bill 121, version 34-Lima Sierra 0382, /Golf from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, House Bill 121, version 34-Lima Sierra 0382, /G as in Gnome, moves from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. Take a brief at ease while we set up for the next bill. We're back on the record now. It's 1:49 p.m. here in Belt's room 105. Our next item up for consideration is Senate Bill 154, Home Care Employment Standards Advisory Board. This is our second hearing on this bill. I would like to invite staff to the bill sponsor, Ryan McKee, to the table to provide us with a brief recap of the bill. Thank you for joining us, Mr. McKee.
All right. Thank you. For the record, Ryan McKee, staff to Senator Yunt. To recap, Alaska faces an acute shortage of direct care workers, particularly outside of population centers. The potential provider workforce demographic, so those ages 18 to 64, is in decline. Furthermore, low pay and lack of benefits forces many caregivers out of the profession and makes recruitment and retention increasingly more difficult for agencies providing in-home care services. So we need to create a strong and long-lasting home care infrastructure in Alaska, which will expand access to quality, affordable home and community-based care for seniors and people with disabilities, keep people in their homes and out of costly facilities, and bolster the creation of jobs. We also need to ensure that Medicaid funding for personal care services is wisely spent, with an adequate portion of the rate going to pay and benefits for direct care workers in order to help address the workforce shortage. And so SB 154 accomplishes both of these objects by, one, establishing a home care employment standards advisory board that will investigate, advise, and develop recommendations on Medicaid rates and other policies to improve the wages, working conditions, and recruitment and retention of direct care workers, and also requiring that agencies provide personal care service that agencies providing personal care services spend at least 70% of the total annual funding they receive from the Department for Personal Care Services on the pay and benefits of personal care assistants providing such services. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. McKee. Are there any questions for bill sponsor staff? With us here from the Division of Senior and Disability Services, we have Mr. Tony Newman. Mr. Newman, would you mind joining us to take us through the fiscal note, please?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Tony Newman. I'm the Director of the Division of Senior and Disability Services, and I'm looking at fiscal note with OMB component number 2663, which would require that the division be appropriated $163,000 in year one of the bill's passage and in out year fiscal year 2027. $327,200. This bill would the fund sources for this bill would be federal receipts and general fund at a 50-50 split, and it would allow us to hire a full-time position upon the bill's passage, and then in fiscal year 2027 a second full-time position.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Newman. Any questions from members about this fiscal note? Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate you being here today. At this time, I'll open public testimony on Senate Bill 154. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify to this item? Is there anyone online? Seeing and hearing no one, at this time we will close public testimony. Is there any further committee discussions or questions on Senate Bill 154? Seeing and hearing none, what are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move to report Senate Bill 154, version 34-Lima Sierra 0836/November from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, Senate Bill 154, version 34-Lima, Sierra 0836, /N, as in Nikiski, is reported from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork and set up for the next bill. We're back on the record. Next up is Senate Bill 62, Board of Parole Membership Report. This is our second hearing on this bill. I would like to invite staff to the bill sponsor, Louis Flora, to the table to provide us a brief recap of the bill. Mr. Flora, welcome back to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please put yourself on the record and begin your recap of the bill.
Thank you, Senate Labor and Commerce Committee and Chair Bjorkman. My name is Louis Flora, for the record, staff to Senator Lukey Tobin. Senate Bill 62, the intent is to create a Board of Parole equipped with expertise in a wide spectrum of the criminal justice, corrections, reentry, mental health, and substance abuse fields. This will inform parole decisions in a new, potentially more holistic way, and it will also help broaden the public understanding of parole decisions by requiring an annual report of parole decisions. The legislative audit from 2024 identified that the Board of Parole has maintained extra staff positions provided under the 2016 Criminal Justice Reform Act, Senate Bill 91, and we were initially, in our first version of the bill, looking to expand the Board of Parole to 7 members to help with their caseload, and we're looking at shifting funding from existing staff positions that were retained to cover the cost of the additional board members. But in further discussions, as I believe we'll see in the committee discussion of a future committee substitute, those positions were not going to be shifted over, and we're retaining a 5-member board. But our intent in Senate Bill 62 is to expand the expertise of the Board of Parole, designating a seat for a person with drug and alcohol counseling experience, as 80% of our inmates have a drug or alcohol addiction issue. It designates a seat for an Alaska Native tribal member, as we know that 40% of the incarcerated population are Alaska Natives. It designates a seat for a professional physician, psychologist, or psychiatrist with mental health expertise. And it designates a seat for a crime victim, family member of a crime victim, or a member of a victim's rights organization. And our intent overall is to create a Board of Parole with relevant expertise in addition to the correctional expertise already found on the parole board, and that this board will do more to support affirmative parole decisions with greater transparency. So, sir, that is a very brief recap. I'm happy to go into more detail, but I stand ready for questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Flora. Are there any questions from committee members? Excuse me. Hearing and seeing none, members have in their packets a proposed draft committee substitute. It's version H. May I have a motion, please?
Mr. Chairman, I move to adopt committee substitute for Senate Bill 62, version 34-Lima Sierra 0227/hotel as the working document.
I'll object for purposes of explanation and invite Mr. Conrad Jackson to the table to explain the changes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Senator Bjorkman and the Labor and Commerce Committee. The CS version H before the members, or soon to be before the members, I presume, makes the following changes. Section 1, we delete all material. This maintains a status quo of 5 members on the Board of Parole. The remaining sections are renumbered accordingly. Section 2, we're inserting a new Section 2, which is amending AS 33-16-020C by adding a limit of service as presiding officer to 1 term. Section 3, we are amending AS 33-16-030b 1 to require that the physician, psychologist, or psychiatrist board member have experience in treating drug or alcohol addiction. We further delete small b 3 from that section. The final change is in section 6. We're amending AS 33-16-080, which is establishing that the commissioner shall hire the executive director for the board, and for administrative purposes, that executive director will be located in the office of the commissioner. And then we renumber the following sections accordingly.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jackson. By way of my personal comments on this CS, we worked with the bill sponsor on this CS as well as the Department of Corrections to make this bill into something that had full support of the Department of Corrections as well as would work within the goals of making the Board of Parole more efficiently operating, as well as to provide some clarity as to decisions made by the board as provided in the report that exists in this bill. A couple of things that have come up in further discussions about the committee substitute are with the requirement for a victim of a crime that you see on page 1. There's significant interest by stakeholders in the Board of Parole that victim of a crime could be a person that has experience with the Board of Parole. So it's being considered, do we want that person to be spelled out as a person who has a victim of some kind of crime of a serious nature or other experience? The difficulty of that is, as we narrow down who would qualify to fill that position, you also limit the amount and number of candidates who could take on that role. Another item that we're considering as well is, and I think is worthy, is whether or not there should be an ex officio member to the board that could represent the victims' rights board or others that could be represented, so you could have communication across boards from victims' compensation to the Board of Parole. Also, as we kind of look at this in Section 2, if Board of Parole members are willing to do the work and stay on the Board of Parole, we might look at a change to Section 2 about not serving more than 1 term total as presiding officer. Maybe they shouldn't serve more than 1 term consecutively. So those are kind of my thoughts on the CS going forward. I'm very thankful for the work that the bill sponsor as well as corrections have put into this CS. Are there any questions from committee members of Mr. Jackson, the sponsor staff, or myself, or comments? Hearing and seeing none, I'll remove my objection to adoption of the CS. Is there further objection? Hearing and seeing no further objection, Work Draft 34-LS0227/H as in HUNA is before us as a working document. Is there any further discussion in regards to the CS for Senate Bill 62? Seeing and hearing none, we will set Senate Bill 62 aside for further consideration at a future meeting. At this time, We have no further meetings scheduled for Senate Labor and Commerce during the final days of this session. However, it appears that House, at least one other House bill or more, may come over that our committee may want to take action on before the end of session. My office will keep you all informed as to any future meetings if they are necessary, but we definitely want to stay liquid in our ability to respond to bills from the other body that come over that may need our attention. So it is my intention to do that. If there are no further comments or questions from committee members, we will adjourn at 2:05 p.m. Thank you, everyone.